Blog Talk Radio.
Storybox Audio. Good evening. It's 6 p.m. and this is the Sunday show on here, Be Monsters Radio. And today we have our co-hosts, Wayne Johnson and Ronald Simon. Good Lord. And we are expecting a drop-in with David, but, you know, we shall see.
David Williams, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, David Williams. And so how did you get? Oh, there he is. Let me put David on.
Oh, good.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I'm glad you're on. You haven't been on in quite a while. You're a good contributor.
Yeah, thank you. Thought I'd give my 2 cents today. Yeah, how are things in the Okie stand? Yeah, same old, you know, coming up with those Taliban laws and all that. So
that's right, good for them. Yeah. We expected nothing less, but, well, go ahead.
Well, actually, right now I think they're trying to outdo the Taliban. They're trying to make it where if a teacher teaches anything that's against a child's religious views, that they can be fined $10,000 a day per student per day.
Yeah, what state is this that you're in?
Oklahoma,
yeah. Well, Florida, of course, has crazy things, too, with the person that's officially called DeSantis, but I call him DeSatan.
Well, we got our equivalent in Oklahoma, so.
Oh, my God.
It's not just okra and catfish heads.
Yeah. No, it's Oklahoma, it's Arizona, it's Georgia, it's Texas, it's Florida,
yeah.
It's Iowa,
yeah.
Kentucky.
It's horrible.
It's just horrible.
Yeah, and the thing is that, I don't know, I mean, I don't understand where the Democratic Party is that as far as trying to fight back against that stuff.
Right.
But, you know, on a state level, maybe they're just outmatched.
Well,
yeah,
many
well,
states, they are outmatched because, like in Florida, I think it's close to 2/3 of the legislature is Republican, close to it. So it's very
yeah,
hard
yeah.
to get anything done, you know.
Well, here's the other thing, too, this travesty is there was a, you know, fundamentalist preacher, Trump fan preacher, that has organized book burning rallies.
Like Nazi Germany,
so,
yep.
Yeah, I was going to say Kristallnacht. Let's just call it what it is. He's formed his own Kristallnacht there in Tennessee.
This brings up, you sent it to me, Wayne, Barry Goldwater talking against religion and government.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Yeah,
and Barry Goldwater, I don't agree with a lot of things, but he made sense in some ways, you know.
Well, and just for everybody.
Yeah, except for those nuclear weapon thing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Well,
but I'm saying, but he was good on some issues about keeping religion out
he
of
was,
government.
Yeah.
And that's why later
yeah.
in his life, when he was no longer in the Senate, people was, you know, right wingers were attacking him because he had the nerves to speak up against their craziness, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we have no Barry Goldwaters today. They're all just nut jobs.
No, Barry Goldwater went to Nixon and said, "You need to resign." He was one of the
yeah,
people going
exactly
to the
right.
White House.
Exactly.
Who's
yeah.
that today? Nobody. Well, of course, not resigned
no.
by way of Trump. Nobody, you know, so it's a different Republican Party than even back 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even think it's even a Republican Party anymore. I think it's just a party of crazy.
Well,
the fascist party is what
like
it should
what
be.
I, yeah. Go ahead, Gwen.
I mean, attacking the Capitol and saying it's a legitimate political discourse.
Oh,
I mean,
my God. Yeah, I just wrote about that on my blog. This is insane, you know. But a few people
yeah.
are speaking up, like Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney. At least a few are, but
not
many
enough.
People are remaining silent like they always do. And some
you know, it's funny. I sort of wrote something on, I think it was Facebook, but anyway, it was sort of comparing the irony of how much storm was raised about the guy that put his knee on the football field, taking a
yeah.
knee, and how they made such a, you know, kick him out of the country and all this other stuff.
Colin Kaepernick,
and,
yeah.
Yeah,
Kaepernick,
and
yeah.
all he was just showing or bringing to mind some of the things that BLM and all the others were trying to raise up, that there is racism in the police force. There was no violence involved in his taking a knee on the football
no.
field. Just the
and
mere fact of doing that.
Well, what
about this new
was,
thing about black coaches not being hired, you know?
what
and how is that not political discourse, but attacking the Capitol and actually causing the death of several people is political discourse.
The video that we
Kafka.
See what really happened, not made up.
That
was showed
it's
all
a redneck Kafka.
That was sedition. That was sedition.
Yeah, treason and sedition.
It was
no,
sedition.
It's political discourse. Oh my God!
And what it was though—that's I don't know how anybody sane could say that, you know. But Kevin McCarthy,
the
not
definition of sedition.
Kaepernick taking the knee on the football field was a practice ritual by Marines who will show a sign of reverence at a fallen comrade or at, you know.
Yes.
That was actually a military sign of reverence that he took under the advice of a few of his compadres.
Yeah, and the horror is that, and he has never played football since. That's not right.
Yeah.
No.
You know,
not.
If the Super Bowl coming up, if one team took a knee, even today, the Republican National Committee and all those others, the politicians, would be saying they're traitors, they should be kicked out of the country, how dare they, all at the same time voting against Cheney and, you know, for the
Kinzinger,
ostracizing.
And Kevin McCarthy takes a knee for Trump, doesn't he? He went to Mar-a-Lago again in the last couple of weeks. He's a disgrace. It makes Paul Ryan and John Boehner, the earlier people who were speakers, look good. Capacity, everything is downhill because they're terrible, but he's worse.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Nixon, he's compared to what they have now. I mean, Nixon's a statesman.
No, I've joked that he's a choir
Bring
boy.
Him back.
I like that line. Nixon did do some good things. He was terrible, but he wasn't totally evil because he did do some good things on the environment, particularly, and Consumer Product Safety Commission, and also with OSHA, and you know, and some other domestic things. He's considered among Republican presidents the quote the most progressive since TR, and nobody since. But not saying he's progressive, but more so than any other Republican president.
Well, he did.
Well, he had that crooked paranoia that just did him in.
What's that?
I said he had that crooked paranoia that just did him in.
Yes.
You know, he did the – where he did the secret deal with Vietnam when Johnson was trying to get – was it Johnson?
LBJ,
trying to get
but
elected.
Nixon,
I mean, that
as bad as he
crazy.
Was, he was intelligent and smart. Trump is dumb. Imagine this craziness. He rips up everything like he's a five-year-old. What kind of craziness is that?
Yeah.
But they can put it all together. I don't know how they can do that. They rip little pieces. They put it. I don't know how they can do that, but I'm amazed that they can, apparently.
Well, I don't understand the cult following. I mean, Trump is Trump. You know, he's, you know, there's hundreds or thousands of them across the country. You know, this five-year-old narcissistic, you know, juvenile. But what's dangerous is why so many people follow him. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, and the thing that bothers me is a lot of these people are evangelical right-wingers or Orthodox Jews, and I don't understand why Orthodox Jews like him. But I'm not saying everyone does, but an awful lot of them do. It infuriates me.
Yeah.
My God, have you ever had a conversation with an Orthodox Jew? I mean,
I have.
They are patriarchal. Yeah, they are backward. They really
well,
are.
Again, I don't want to say every single person, but honestly, the people I've met, I have not been happy with who have been that. But I don't want to claim every person. You never can say that. But
well,
certainly, they have a patriarchal system with the idea that women are second class. But that's all religions do. Not just
you know, not every Oklahoman has a catfish head on the fence post. But how many do you have to have before we start, you know, getting smeared by them?
Oh,
yeah. You know, it doesn't take very many.
What happened to the Oklahoma of Fred Harris? Remember Senator Fred Harris?
Yeah.
From the 70s?
Well, what happened to Ann Richards in Texas?
Yes.
Yeah.
And what happened in South Dakota with Kristi Noem the night?
More cheery.
Comparing it to George McGovern.
How about the Ukraine?
What's that? I missed that. What?
I said, let's switch over to a much more cheery subject. How about Ukraine?
Oh, let's do that one.
And World War III.
Yeah, we were discussing before the show started that my background is I always thought was Russian Jewish, but actually it was from what's really Ukraine. My relatives came, my ancestors came, but it was called Russia. But it was from like Odessa and areas like that. And oh my God, this is just amazing what's going on, the horrors of it. And
well,
the loss of life.
What's your opinion of it? Do you feel that Ukraine's being trampled upon, or you think Russia has a legitimate concern about their defense?
Let's take turns on that one. So, Ron, you speak first, and then Gwen, you follow up, and I'll close up, or
okay.
I'll follow behind you. But go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, absolutely. Ukraine is an independent country. It's also very large, by the way. I didn't realize how large it was in territory. It's the largest country in Europe, actually, in land. It's got 44 million people. And, you know, it was under Russian domination in the past, but it's been independent. It's not a part of NATO, but they, in theory, could someday be part of NATO. But Ukraine has a democratic government now, you know, with its leader, who's a comedian, by the way. He was a comedian in the past. And but I am very worried that, you know, although I do think Putin is thinking about backing off, because I just get the feeling he realizes NATO is going to really go against him economically. I think Biden so far looks very strong. I don't know if it can be prevented, but it is very possible he'll find a way out. I'm hopeful, but I don't know. Anyway, that's my take.
Go ahead, Gwen. Your thoughts, Gwen.
Well, I don't think any of them have got their crap together, and I think that Putin's just, you know, throwing, it's like those guys at MIT that are shooting ball bearings into different dimensions. Nobody knows what's going to happen, but if Putin gets the idea that he will gain more than he will lose by going in, he'll go in. I mean, he won't do it
right.
to China. He mm-hmm. won't do it to China. It's not that caught backwards, but I don't know, David, what's your opinion? What do you think?
Let's let the next person go. What do you think?
Yeah, it's Wayne. Wayne Johnson. I use John Nash's game theorem and a lot, and I have looked at all the you know, different variables and stuff, and have played them out and things like that. Putin, Russia itself, now Russia's one, Ukraine's another now. Ukraine had been part of Russia. And as a matter of fact, Alfred Warren Tennyson, when he wrote the poem, Charge of the Light Brigade, the British troops had invaded into the Crimean Peninsula, which was part of the Ukraine. And, you know, they charged down all those cannons, which were Russian cannons at the time. And henceforth, the poem of that sacrificial through misunderstanding orders and the idiocy of the whole scenario.
Blind faith, yes.
Ukraine had been part of Russia for hundreds of years, but when the economic collapse of Russia, right after Gorbachev or during Gorbachev, each one of these little areas broke off into their own countries. And Ukraine decided that they were going to go democratic with their capitalism and things like that with their economy. The government was a democracy. They have wanted to, and have stayed during the Obama administration, and Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, made a lot of gestures and desires to become part of NATO, i.e. that European economic engine that they wanted to associate themselves with, instead of the failed system of Russia. So they have an economic motivation for going into NATO. The problem is, too, now, though, but Germany gets a lot of its natural gas now from Russia, where if we do sanctions and stuff, everybody else can kind of, the Eastern Bloc of Hungary, Czechoslovakia, what had been Yugoslavia, those areas, Croatia, they could survive, but Germany probably wouldn't be able to go along as well as others because they are subservient to the natural gas for their heating and stuff coming from Russia. And
heater,
like you said,
is also no longer Merkel, who is
right.
a strong figure, you know.
Exactly, right. Very good point.
Oh, it's a new one. And I don't know much about him, but he's not Merkel.
Right. But, yeah, like, in other words, here it is the thing, too, and it's, we saw it repeat through history. Argentina went into an economic depression. The inflation was like 1,000%. So to divert the attention of their failed economy, they decided, you know, we're going to go nationalism and reclaim the Falkland Islands. Of course, that didn't end up well because with the Brits. Saddam Hussein had fought many years with Iran, draining the economic coffers of Iraq. So when time comes and he needed more money, then that's when he went into Kuwait. And that didn't end up well with him either. But that was the motivation, right? You know, we're out of money, so let's raid the piggy bank next door.
So you
Putin's
think
economic, right? Putin's economic aspects in Russia are very, very poor. The Ukraine is full of natural resources and potential wealth, and it had, like I said, of course, it had traditionally been part of Russia for hundreds of years, and this is what Putin's been looking at to try to. Well, I'm going to try to bring this back in and reassemble, you know, USSR. Problem is now people are standing up to him and saying, you know, we're not going to do it. Not only it's not only Biden, but again, NATO and the European countries saying that, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. So now the key is excuse me, how can Putin back out and save face with his countrymen? Those, if he's the leader, if he doesn't get some kind of, you know, the art of a negotiation has to be a win-win for both parties. And so what is the scenario that at least can have Putin to save face with his, you know, people in his country, and NATO be able to do it too? That's kind of the, that is the key things we're going. And if it doesn't, then we're going to implode on each other. He will go in. He will go in for economics. And Gwen, you're absolutely right. If he can see, if I do this and I come out ahead, or I can count this as a victory. Oh, I'm going to dance now.
What's
and
that?
I can count this to my population that, see what I've done? I won, and I got the Ukraine back. Or if he loses, then he himself will be in trouble politically.
I gather, though, however, that a lot of people in Russia don't seem to be interested in the whole issue. I think he can make a lot of enemies if he goes in, if it doesn't work out easily for him.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's like I said, there is a lot of cause and effect, we'll label it like that, that to me looks like it will be very bad for the eyes of the world population, the global population, if he does. But does he give a rat's ass?
So what do you think, David?
Well, first let me... Yeah, I wish you hadn't mentioned the game theory, because that's an entire subject that sort of interests me. But I think it applies more from John Newman as opposed to John Nash. But anyway, one is there's a couple of major gas pipelines that go from Russia, which is Gazprom, a major gas producer, and goes through Ukraine and into Europe. Okay, upcoming is the just completed Nord Stream 2, which is going through the Barents Sea and comes down off the coast of Finland and comes into Greifswald, Germany, okay? It bypasses Ukraine, and Ukraine loses $1.5 billion in fees for the gas going through its pipeline. So it's $1.5 billion a year that they're going to lose. And that's only if Nord Stream 2 gets approved, and Germany is the one lacking the approval. All they have to do is approve it. It's already completed. But in the approval process, they cannot approve it as Russia is at war with any country in Europe. So there's that to throw out there. Another is thinking on Putin's side, okay, say that Ukraine gets into the NATO, and then suddenly NATO wants to install their latest and greatest missile system 3 minutes off the border of Russia, okay? Russia cannot defend itself now against NATO. It certainly doesn't want the whole of NATO bound by contract to go to war with Russia. So at some point, I think Putin is drawing a red line and saying, hey, look, you know, back in the 80s, you said this. You've been progressing eastward, 17 countries since Boris Yeltsin, even though you said that you wouldn't. And if this goes through, I'm going to have missiles right on my border. And think about how in 1962 we were willing to destroy the world for having Cuba missiles in Cuba, 60 right. miles from our coastline. Why does they not have the same concerns now about what's going to be a possibility in their future?
Putin, exactly.
Right now, I think Putin would be derelict of his duties if he didn't force Ukraine to not join NATO.
Right. No, you're and the thing, and a lot of people don't understand. This was the what Kennedy did. We had missiles in Turkey at that time, and he and Khrushchev, Kennedy and Khrushchev, you know, as they were talking, and you know, things were teetering on war, and we had blockades around Cuba. Basically, they made the deal. Said, look, you get your missiles out of Cuba, and we will pull our missiles out of Turkey, which is bordering right up there to the same area where we're talking about here. You know, when you go out the Black Sea,
yeah.
you're coming through Istanbul, right? I mean, it's just, you know, the Black Sea is right there. And so
yeah.
basically...
Well, the Black Sea has a huge naval base, Russian naval base in the Black Sea, and, you know, in Crimea. Enormous.
Yeah,
that's where all their subs are launched from. So... You know, if Ukraine is trying to break free of Russia and Crimea being part of Ukraine at the time, why would not Russia try to get Crimea at least separated from Ukraine? I don't understand why we're not allowing Russia a sphere of influence while we're demanding all our spheres of influence, not only in Asia, but mm-hmm. in Europe and Antarctica.
Well, David, and let me interject here quick. Gwen had me on as a guest several years ago, and we
yeah.
were talking about Ukraine. Again, we were talking about Ukraine at the time.
2014, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I made this statement then. I said, Russia will go into the Crimea Peninsula and take it over because that's their only warm water port. Right now, the Crimean Peninsula has been annexed into Russia. And it wasn't 10 days later they did that. They did exactly what I said they were going to because, like I said, and it's not just submarines. You're right. They do have submarines. But I have, when I was in the Navy and in the Mediterranean, there was a lot of the Russian fleet and also regular commercial shipping that came out of that Crimean Peninsula,
mm-hmm.
cargo ships and things like that. So, yes, as a matter of fact, I've got a picture on my cell phone where basically, long story short, there was a destroyer that was just harassing the aircraft carrier, which was the Roosevelt, the FDR, and they sent my destroyer out in front, way in front, several miles in front of the aircraft carrier. Aircraft carrier headed towards us. So when that Russian destroyer radar made a sweep, you know, they didn't see anything, and of course there was just this great big aircraft carrier right in front of them. Well, when they got up to us, the aircraft carrier broke off, and all of a sudden we popped up on their radar and spooked her. She threw her missiles on the rail, surface-to-surface missiles. Their directors were locked onto us, and we were just sitting still in the water. And they're, you know, like, you know, the Indians going around the wagon train, they circled us, right, with those, and those missiles just, they just moved. They stayed targeted right on our ship, locked onto our ship. Of course, us being good, red-blooded American sailors, we went out and told them, hey, come suck my ass, you know, and dropping our drawers and showing our ass and say, kiss my ass, right? I have a photo of that I would glad to share with anybody. But that was, so I know well about the Russian Navy coming out of the Black Sea into the Mediterranean, coming out of that Crimean Peninsula. I've faced them
myself.
Yeah,
my whole point is not that Ukraine should not have the ability to sort of create their own destiny. But being pragmatic, you have to realize that Russia has true defense concerns about the possibility of Ukraine joining NATO. It's like –
Oh, I agree.
I'm
sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I agree with everything that you said there with the analysis. This is a serious
issue. And I think that if a compromise was made and some true, sincere politics and diplomatic action, like saying that we promise that we will never allow Ukraine to join NATO. NATO has nothing to do with democracy. And we promise to never, ever install our NATO weapon systems in Ukraine. Then, okay, we give them that. We recognize their security concerns. And therefore, Russia should allow Ukraine to, you know, form their own governments or not be, you know, unduly influenced by Russian action. But you can't have it all in one way. We've already thrown not allowing weapons in Ukraine out the window. They refuse to even negotiate with that, United States and NATO. So, you know, you got to consider that. To me, it doesn't seem like they're really being sincere. They're trying to back Putin into a corner that I don't think anybody wants anybody to be backed into.
It is kind of a declaration of, you know, cross this line in the sand.
It's the most dangerous situation internationally since the missile crisis.
It's a very dangerous situation.
60 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand that, you know, we wouldn't allow Russia to install missile networks on the Mexican border, would we?
No.
I mean, we'd raise holy hell. You know, you have to think not only for yourself, but also in the minds of your supposed enemy. That, you know, they have legitimate concerns, I think. And I think it's negotiable. Now, this is what diplomacy is about.
Yeah. Well, we're trying
to. It doesn't have to be war. You know, it seems like we only got one speed, our way or at war.
Yeah. But I am concerned that this could also lead to a threat against Poland, which is a NATO nation that borders on Russia. That worries me.
Yeah, I don't think Russia's going to chance of going into Poland with Poland being a NATO nation and risking.
And also,
you know,
Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania.
Nuclear weapons.
Yeah. I just hope not. That's what I worry about. And I worry about how it affects China with Taiwan. Oh, my God. I think they're going to attack Taiwan sometime.
Yeah.
What about Russia going into Finland? Or Russia going in to Turkey?
Well, they did in 1940.
Germany went into France in 1941. Well, you know.
Yeah, so the Finnish fought hard.
You can raise up these concerns, but are they legitimate concerns?
Right.
You know, I don't think Russia invading Poland is even on the picture, and NATO is there for that very reason. But on the other hand, you have to weigh and balance. You can't say, okay, Russia's bad. We need missiles, you know, 140 miles from Moscow.
Yeah, that's silence along the front again, and it just won't play. I see your point, Dave, and I think it's well made.
That Russia was an empire in itself. They were the Soviet Union, and ever since it disbanded, Putin, who was in
KGB
time, Putin has looked at that as, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to his country in the history of ever. And even the Russian people, you know, they think, well, communism, now they're not communists. Everything's all good. A lot of people don't feel that way over in Russia. They think as when they were communists, as the good old days.
Right.
And if you don't believe that, just ask somebody from Russia.
Well, to a certain degree, that's very true, because what Putin has done is created an economy based on black market survival tactics.
Here's what he is. He's a thug.
Yeah.
I mean,
Putin's
a good
true.
Guy.
At least when they had
I'm
the
saying
committee.
This is the game board that we're playing on right now, and the end result is not that you want war. You have to realize what your other player is coming up with.
Yeah. I think part of the reason this has happened is because of Trump's relationship with Putin, I think, helped to make things worse.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, look, there's been no secret, and it's been plain as that Putin owned Trump, because when he was totally bankrupt and lost the most record amount of money on those screwy-ass deals he did with casinos and the Taj Mahal and all that, there wasn't a bank in this country or many other countries that would even loan him a dime. But they were getting all their money laundered through the Deutsche Bank, from Russia.
Putin, yeah, that's right. And also,
Putin,
a lot of Russian oligarchs were buying those condos in New York
exactly,
for like 20 times
exactly
what they really were.
Those Russian oligarchs
exactly
in South Florida, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's
God,
quite a few properties down here.
So you almost wonder if the Russians have taken
yeah
over Florida because our governor acts like he is part of the oligarchy.
Well,
he's crazy.
I can't think of her name now, but there was a woman, a Russian woman, who was sent to this country to funnel Russian funds into the NRA for them to disseminate it around to all.
Yes, Nave, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And there's somebody that's in Kentucky that's Russian that has had a connection with McConnell,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell. Great. They bought Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell got it so that I forget the name of the company, but Russian manufacturing would come into Kentucky.
Right.
The thing,
right,
and this was supposed to boost the revenue of the state, you know, 100%. The point is though that yes, they got the Russian company in there, but then you had like 200 and some odd Russians move over here to work the company. And
you
yeah
wonder if they're involved in espionage.
They
could be involved in espionage, too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think that's not happening.
And same with Chinese.
Also, the thing to remember
yeah
is that politicians aren't, you know, particular to Russia. They're in love with money. And,
money and power, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody says about all the money that Saudi Arabia throws over here and all these others. You know, it's sort of like a confirmation bias when you say, oh, Russia, Russia. But how about Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia, or Israel, Israel, or
Israel,
you know,
yeah,
China, China. There's a lot of money being thrown at the United States because it's safe. That's where
right
all the investment
well
money comes from.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's true, too.
Right.
The
yeah
economic instability that we're seeing globally, people are going to put their money here because they say it's at least this is the most stable country going right now.
Yeah. China's coming up pretty quick, though. But I think, you know, my bottom line in my argument is that I just don't want to see a war. It's not necessary.
Right.
It's
right.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Who does?
And,
yeah.
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 And,
I mean,
and
Ukraine's going to lose out, and it's just going to be another country that, you know, sort of a proxy war, like,
right,
you know, Iraq and all these others,
Vietnam,
where all these new weapons get tried out and all these people die and all these
yeah
people are refugees in other countries while,
yep,
you know, the big countries sort of play the chessboard.
Well,
yeah,
and
but
we're not
going to troops into the country, into Ukraine.
And
just,
who's making these policy decisions, too? A Democrat in office, that's who. And so you have to remember that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff going on in Ukraine of just, you know, I hate even to use the word deep state, but, you know, there's a lot of military power and there's a lot of things
right
that, you know, driven by the oil petroleum industry. You
right
know, it's,
which should,
you know,
which
the oil guys
be
over here and the gas guys do not
this
want Russia delivering oil and gas in that kind of quantity to Germany or Europe. They don't want to give them that kind of influence. They don't want to give them that kind of power. And if
right
they can do anything at all to stop it, they've been trying to stop it for about 7 years now.
Right.
And
well,
the bigger point is, the bigger point is that petroleum is supposed to be something that we are getting rid of. And our government policies they're not demonstrating them. They're not demonstrating them even an eensy bit. So,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is, you know, it was just a simple act of a Serbian shooting the king and queen of Austria, that's dominoed into the worst slaughtering of mankind war, with new automated weapons and i.e. machine guns, the technological advances of the gas attacks, things like that, accuracy of artillery shells, and it's just the Ukraine could be the linchpin, the fuse that lights up a global nuclear annihilation.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
you know, It could be another World War One, but more dangerous, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing is if it's seen in this country that Biden buckled and lost out, don't think the Trump clans and cults aren't going to attack him on that as if he was weak and all that for not going, you know, nuclear war with Putin. That's where the insanity that they will come out in this election.
But, you know, really, who gives a fuck? Oh, excuse my language, but who gives an F about what Trump thinks? You know, it's like...
Yeah, well, no. It's not Trump. Exactly. Oh, he'll fan the flames. But there is the cult of the Trumpists out there.
There is.
Well,
that's true.
Right. That's what's going to
be
attacking.
For those simple-minded five-second, you know, soundbite people.
There you
but,
go.
The oil and gas has been the power of the country, the world, for 100 years. It's, you know, it's like 20-mile-long vessel going out in the ocean. And even if someone says stop, it's going to take, you know, 100 miles before it actually comes to a standstill. And that's the way it is. There's just so much power invested in the structure of gas and petroleum that, you know, even if you say, oh, we're switching over to whatever, it'll take them 30 years, even if they stop today, to, you know,
and we have climate change already
that.
In this world, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, you guys are forgetting some of the notable changes that have been made in the last couple of years due to, you know, global pandemic. When there was such a huge lockdown going on globally, and by the way, it's still going on in places like China and some of the European countries, the healing of the planet was pretty amazing. A lot of things shifted. And people working from home is now, I mean, you're not going to change what has happened. The structure of business has shifted. Because
a lot of people now are home all the time, and then will never go back to the office. You're right.
No, I mean, that's a very good point, Gwen, that you brought up.
Globally.
It has shown people that there's different ways.
Shifting. It is shifting. No matter what you think, because we still go down to the gas station and get our gas for the car, but how much of that gas are you using compared to what you once did?
Right.
And it's shifting. And as it shifts, other things are happening. I mean, these kids that are engineers and architects and stuff, they are coming up with incredible ways to supply energy to communities. That's just outstanding. The most incredible thing I read, I think this was almost 2 years ago, was an engineering student who came up with a system that works, that takes the waves hitting on the shore to, you know, power a community. And
it's based on a transducer.
And he came up with
this is what
storage
I did for a
system.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's he came up with a storage system. Yeah, the architects and the engineers and the computer people. We got to learn to use technology responsibly.
Go ahead, Glenn.
But I mean, there are shifts going on. There really are. So.
And the thing is, productivity is up. A lot of people are being much more productive working from home than being in an office, being watched over every minute, you know?
And I'm part of that crew. I'm working from home.
Yes,
David,
I know you are.
I work in, yeah.
You do.
David, I work in both mechanical and electrical engineering. And for the last 10 years, well, I've done it for 15 years, upgrading the electrical infrastructure grid around the country. Right now, the big concentration is here in the Mid-Atlantic. And we just had a company-wide meeting. We have engineering offices all across the country. And we have, and they don't talk about projects, David. They talk about how many hours that they have booked. And we have over 4 million hours booked just for this year alone.
Wow.
For offshore wind farms, you know, doing designs, upgrading photovoltaic, solar arrays around. It's just there is a big demand right now for upgrading the way we generate electricity and how we get it from point A to point B.
There's a lot of promising solutions out there, but don't forget that 100-mile-long ship that is the power of the current structure in the world. And like I said, you just don't say, hey, let's stop this and let's bring up this. It's a lot better. There's a lot of people on that ship that make a lot of money. And, you know, to be a realistic person, you have to consider those people that are being shifted in as far as power structure. Not power as in, you know, electricity power, but power as in wealth, money, and that sort of power.
And they're not going to go quietly. They aren't going to give it up quietly.
No, they will not.
They're going to fight tooth and nail. And you are absolutely right with that statement. So, and, of course, we can point to Texas. Had cold weather. And 275 people died because they froze to death in their homes.
Wow.
The fault, you know, and the thing was, and they tried to blame it on the green energy of the photovoltaics and the windmills. But the truth be is, that was the only thing that was supplying the electricity to that grid in Texas.
Yeah,
because they're their own little electric grid, right? Because they want to be able to walk away from, you know, the United States anytime they want to.
That Texas governor, he's a work of art.
Yeah, he's right. Well, that's what I'm saying. And they have laws on their books that Enron put in there 30 years ago. And that's why when the electric grid fails, all of a sudden people have electric bills $800 for the month.
Oh, we're like 4,000.
Yeah, okay.
Some of those people had it where they were tied to their bank account, and after it goes above a certain amount, they were having like weekly withdrawals on their bank account for their electricity.
Yeah,
that's right.
Automatic withdrawals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all that being said, the lessons that they should have learned last year, they didn't address one thing. They made sure you had guns. They made sure that they were going to build a fence between them and Mexico. They were going
and
to
also
make sure
abortions
that they
were be banned.
Make sure women don't get abortions. Did they do a damn thing about making corrections in their electrical infrastructure grid and to prevent it? No, guess what? 70,000 people in Texas right now do not have electricity.
Yeah. You know, I would say Republicans, but, you know, there's some good logical speaking or logical thinking Republicans out there. It's just this fringe that have gotten a hold of their party that's just killing them.
Well, those people you mentioned that are logical are leaving the Republican Party. They're repudiating it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like I told Jack Kemp back in 2005.
The famous Jack Kemp comment.
Yeah.
I think if every time he said that, I'd be wealthy.
They need to fight for their party.
Huh?
No, just leaving the party is not a valid, I don't think it would be a valid thing. They need to fight for their party.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't say, I'm retiring next year. You know, I can't stand this craziness.
We'll see what happens in November with all these Trump people being probably nominated, whether they win or the Democrats gain those seats.
Well, time will tell. Like I said, I've got a friend.
9 months.
He ran for state senator in Delaware. And, and basically he lost. But basically he said, these wingnut Republicans, these extremist Republicans, will walk through 5 feet of snow blizzard to go vote. Those that should be voting for themselves couldn't bother to come out of the house if he showed up with a limousine and ferried them back and forth from the voting booth and took them back. They're not going to get out off the bed, you know. That's the problem.
Yeah, right.
The Democrats are not turning out to vote for their interests, and they're suffering.
You're right.
So.
Well, guys, I just had my son come up and give me the – I apparently got something going on, so I'm going to have to sign off. But it's good to talk to you.
Thanks for being on.
I need to come on the line a lot more. It's been a good discussion.
Yes, we do.
And you're always welcome, David. We do.
Yes.
We really do value you showing up.
Thanks,
Captain. Thank you, guys and girls. wish me well on Okistan.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, Okistan. All
right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's a very good conversation, Glenn.
Yes.
Good
pretty good.
So what else do we want to get into here now?
Well, I wanted to mention about my son published this article about the environment.
Oh, yes, please.
Same day I published my article on six anti-war senators in the last 100 years who voted against the tide. And it was just coincidence. They both happened on Friday. I did mine first, and I didn't know he was publishing on The Hill as I was publishing on History News Network, but it's really funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like I saw that. Very good.
Unusual
very good
event
too.
To have a father and son published on the same day, you know?
Well, like I said, they're both – I tell the read our listeners of the in our audience here, read both of those accounts. They're both very
David
good.
David Feynman on The Hill and Ronald Feynman on History News Network, yep.
There you go. Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Biden is
you.
Dealing with three major issues right now, I guess. The
how about three?
threat from Russia.
Yeah.
The opportunity he has to eliminate the Islamic State's top leader.
Yes,
and an opening on the Supreme Court. Well, what did you say about that?
Well, I was pointing out about that this week has been a good week. I just did it. I just published it on Progressive Professor about the fact that, you know, about the economy, the best first-year economy or best mm-hmm. one-year economy ever, 6.6 million jobs, and also about, you know, the ISIS issue. And
okay,
the Supreme Court, of course,
this
issue about black women. So there's nothing horrible about picking somebody who's qualified who happens to be a black woman. It's nuts, you know, that people should be against it.
Well, that's the racist aspect.
When you talk about the economy, Ron, you're talking about inflation that is going sky high. Have you seen the price of groceries, let alone gas?
Yes, that's true. But at the same time, we've had unemployment low and jobs created and also the stock market. And the inflation is part of a worldwide issue. It's not just us. And it would happen if Trump was in. It would not have been any different. And it's not going to last long. But it is a problem. I do say that.
I don't see the economy being a big boom for anybody in a political office at this moment. But, of course, they will manipulate the facts to however they wish them to go. There are still plenty of places around here where people are even being offered $15 an hour and they're not taking the jobs. There are places that can't operate because nobody will take the jobs, whether it's from Omicron and COVID or it's because they've just had it and they're holding out for better or they found something better online, at home, whatever.
Well, Glenn, and let me throw this out. Say I have traditionally been, I'm going to go work in this, I'll just do air quotes, a sandwich shop. And I'm going to work for a guy and he's going to decide what hours I work, and, you know, if I have my son's birthday, but I have to work and I can't get off, or, you know, all the subservient aspects of somebody else holding your purse strings, or I say, screw it, I'm going to start my own sandwich shop.
Yeah, a lot of people are starting their own businesses,
Exactly. So
you know,
I'm not going to go work for you for $15 an hour. I'm going to go my own business.
Excuse me, but small bricks and mortar enterprises are closing. They're not opening. On the whole, they're not. But here's a wonderful thing that has happened, and mostly because of COVID again. A lot of people have moved out of glutted urban areas back into the country, and they're reviving small towns.
Oh, yeah, especially in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, one thing in South Florida, in Florida generally, a lot of people can't even live here anymore. The rents are out of sight. They have to leave.
Yeah.
Plus, too, we even here, we're seeing this here even in Annapolis, the coastal tidal encroachment onto the land that had traditionally been high enough to build upon and stuff. Matter of fact, there's a lot of business owners and those who have some very high valuable real estate here in Annapolis have all joined together and are suing the hydrocarbon industry because Exxon knew 40 years ago that they were going to have this issue with climate change and flooding of the coastal areas, and they did not. They lied about it. So they've got lawsuits out there. Norfolk, where the U.S. Navy base is, they just spent, I forget how many, I mean, it runs down the coast. They had to build it up. You know, it's like, you know, just trying to put a Band-Aid on the issue because of this main highway. They built it up and they repaved it and stuff. Bottom line was because at high tide, that highway was flooded. So we're seeing it here. And but yeah, you're right. You know, say that the business was on there. And guess what? If I got flooded out, I'm going to find something a little higher ground inland and open up my business there. The Naval Academy just raised their bulkhead up another 18 inches because at high tide,
I would think so.
They would become flooded, right? Because it's actually
so.
On the peninsula of the Severn River and the Spahn River where they meet up to form that peninsula, and that's where I live. I live on, in a condo on Spahn Creek, and like I said, you know, the Naval Academy is about 2 miles away from me downriver. So.
Oh, that's a pretty area, but it's also like Miami Beach. They're getting flooded
exactly.
constantly now.
Yes, they are.
And New York
Charleston,
City
South
subways,
Carolina.
The New York City subways are catching it too. It's flooding out. This is
talking about the subways and also having this new concept of more crime in the subways. Like that young Asian woman who was pushed in front of a train and killed a couple of weeks ago, and there's been more incidents like that. It's really scary to even be on the subway system in a city like New York now.
Yeah.
You're kidding. I had no idea.
40-year-old woman, she was waiting for the train. Somebody, a homeless person, knocked her onto in the way of a train coming into the station. She didn't even see him, but she was killed immediately, 40-year-old woman.
Of course.
Probably the Asian American.
Yeah.
Terrible.
That's awful. Yeah, I understand that even the buskers are staying out of the subways, and that's unheard of, too. I've never walked into a New York, the subway, the train stations underneath.
I used to use the subways years ago when I lived in New York. Never thought it would be anything like that. My God.
I always, every time I've been in one, and I lived there and I used to commute that way, always the music, the musicians, the buskers were always there.
Mm-hmm,
and you
mm-hmm.
always appreciate everything from classical to rock and roll to reggae, everything represented there, even rap, you know. I do believe Queen Latifah started out in there. And now they won't even go because they can't be sure that they won't get their instruments, their electronics and whatnot won't get, you know,
ruined.
And I would imagine, I don't know, they're probably in the D.C. subway system, the second biggest. There's a lot of crime. I don't know, but I imagine there's trouble there, too, and in Chicago and Boston and San Francisco. So there's no safe place now, you know. That's why Mayor Adams has declared a war on crime in New York City, you know. It's just unbelievable.
And it gets down to the economic aspects, too. You know, those that... you know, weren't able to adapt or be able to convert over to working from home and stuff, you know, basically aren't working. And if a man's hungry, who knows what they're going to do. The violence is going to be escalating as things get bad economically.
Yeah, the crime wave generally, it's only, every day you see all these stories around the country of all kinds of use of guns and people being killed.
Hate crimes. Yes, so so-called hate crimes.
Yes,
yeah,
hate crimes against Jews, against gays, against Asians, against African Americans.
What does that tell you about the everyday economy? Because there's always a relative relationship between economy and crime in an urban area.
And the thing is the stratification of the demographics. Some may feel it, and others are going to benefit from it.
That's true too, but
you know, unfortunately, that's true.
Yeah. It's, you know, things are shifting, but it's unnoticeable in some ways. And by the way, you know, we still got a global pandemic, as everybody likes to say. There's still friggin' plague out there, people.
900,000 now died in the United States.
Yeah. And the thing is there's a new variant that has come out. What is it called? DM or something, I can't remember now, but there's another COVID, the new variant.
I haven't heard. It's,
you know, again, like I said, that COVID virus is very good at morphing and adapting and evolving. And the more human host that it has to embed itself in, the more aggressive and more chances it has of coming up with a new variant. And those running around saying, I ain't getting that goddamn government-mandated vaccine, yada, 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 you know.
Meanwhile, 95% of the people dying, you know, 2,400 a day, are people who are not vaccinated.
Exactly.
Well, there's,
exactly.
There's always that to consider and, you know, cross a few off the list, you know? I don't mean to sound that you know,
jaded.
That hard-assed. I don't
right.
mean to sound that hard-assed, but, you know, enough's enough.
Look.
It's a Darwin Award in effect.
Darwinism
is
a fact.
Darwinism is not really a fact.
Okay.
You know,
just joking.
If we had evolved simply from survival of the fittest, there'd be no question. We'd all be strapped in armor and in our own castle.
There is a limitation of what can be evolved from biological material.
Yeah, I wanted to mention before we go about the fact that one of the senators, unfortunately, had a stroke, a young guy, 49, Senator Ben Ray Lujan of New Mexico. So now it holds up the whole Democratic agenda because there's not 50 votes.
Well,
and that's scary because he's young. If somebody older, like Bernie Sanders, died or
right.
a bit, or was incapacitated, we'd be in real crisis. And even with this, for at least a month now or more, they don't have 50 senators able to vote.
That's a shame.
He's 49.
Right.
They say he'll recover, but it's not going to happen overnight. And you have to be in the Senate to vote. You can't do it remotely. So it's going to hold up any agenda on the Build Back Better or even on the Supreme Court nominee. Probably will have to be delayed. Not that it's a rush yet. It's still early. But I'm just saying it's not good when somebody, you know, when there's a 50-50 Senate, either side, if they lose somebody temporarily, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
That's wild. I mean, you know, guys, I think we need to let the children have the reins. These old grubby bastards that need
Well,
to
I tell you, the leadership is only in the 80s now, mostly. And the House Democratic leaders, Pelosi, Hoyer, and Clyburn, and also now Mitch McConnell hits 80 this month.
They all need to take a rest. They all need to get the hell out of town. They really do.
But Nancy, I don't know if she's going to run to be Speaker, but she's running for another term, so I think she's going to still try to be Speaker if they have the control. Now, if they don't have the control, maybe she'll resign, but I don't know. But she's all right, but it's time for a change. It really is, you know.
Right, and the thing is, you know, let's look at this. You know, when you get a certain age, and don't want to call it age discrimination, it may be, but if you have the values that you want to prefer forward, we just saw Ruth Bader Ginsburg pass.
Yeah.
Because she had cancer, she was fighting it, and didn't step down. Of course, when finally nature took its course, then Mitch McConnell and Trump jumped right on that, and now we have this skewed Supreme Court.
Amy Coney Barrett.
Right.
Who's far less qualified than a lot of these black women judges or others that are being mentioned for the seat now.
Right. You know, there's a time that you said, you know what, I've done my duty, I've served my country well, it's time for the young to step up.
Yes, it's time to say goodbye, by the way. Very soon,
It is. So I want to thank you all. I want to thank David for stopping by. I hope he'll do that again. And I think everybody should go and read Ron's article that was published in the History News Network. And his son's on the Hill. What's the name of that article?
David Feynman, yes. I don't have the exact title in front of me at the moment. If you give me a minute, I don't know if I have time to get. I don't have it right at this instant.
We've only got a few seconds, so look for Ron's page on Facebook, where I'm sure it's posted. And that would be for Ronald Feynman, the progressive professor, and Wayne Johnson. All can be found on media. And thank you for listening this week. We'll be back next week for the Sunday show at 6 p.m. And this has been brought to you by Daughters of Isis, Inc., the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Go over and take a look. We have a wonderful website with a lot of wonderful products.
Yeah, I'd like to intervene. Record numbers of people enjoying public lands is a good thing if we fund them, by David Feynman on the Hill from Friday. Thank you.
Okay. That's the end. Thank you, people.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.